This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
We're going to go a little close to home today. We're going to talk about your health. We've talked about health care policy in the past, but that's theoretical and policy wonk stuff, which is mostly what we do here. But we're going to get a whole lot closer to home and talk about your health and what you can do for it. Our guest here is Dr. Siri Chan Khalsa. She's an MD with a master's, probably nutrition?
Yes, okay. Biochemistry.
Biochem, okay. Lifelong interest in utilizing delicious plant-based food as a basis for health. Okay, we lost some of our audience there. We'll get into that, however. She did a residency in internal medicine at the Mayo Clinic and has worked in the past with Dr. Andrew Well, a well-known alternative medicine advocate based in Tucson. Francine Hardaway is here as well. She's going to speak from...
Dr. Francine Hardaway.
Yeah, but not... Both of us wrong kind of doctors. Yours is in English. Mine is in social science. The only relevance of that is I have some familiarity with the scientific model for dealing with things, but no claim of content
knowledge. I'm articulate.
Yeah, you have and have opinions on everything worth hearing, which is why you're here. Dr. Khalsa, tell us about what kind of diet you advocate and how you got there.
So in my college years, I was a pre-med major until my third year, and I decided I would be a chef. Oddly enough. So I took a semester off and learned how to cook. And I realized I was going to work pretty hard learning how to be a chef and hopped back into the medical school pathway. However, along the way, I've had various diversions. So I grew up in a household where my mom had been, she was born in Iowa. And in Iowa, they thought it would be a fun outing to take the high school kids to the local meat manufacturing plant. And pretty much from that point forward, she couldn't eat meat. So, however, my dad loved ZZ Top and barbecue. So I grew up in a household where we had a lot of diversity of palates. And through my own journey, through my own health processes, I began to refine what a plant-based diet meant for me. And there's a lot of nuances in the terminology.
And I want to go through that. We hear vegetarian, we hear vegan,
exactly.
We hear plant-based. I'm not sure how that relates exactly to both of those, but I'll let you explain.
Sure.
That.
Basically, when I finished college, I proceeded on to a master's degree and into residency in medical school. And as some of your listeners probably know, there's a very minuscule amount of nutritional information provided to clinicians.
And I was aware of that, but I know that staggers most people. They think that would be part of medical school curriculum, but it's really not.
It's not. It's not even in residency. Oddly enough, I mean, I would go into – and I trained at a premier institution. We would go into – as residents, you'd go into the hospital, into the patient's room, and they're there for a diabetic episode, and they're eating – maple syrup and really refined white flour, white sugar pancakes. And, you know, they're counting carbs, but they're not really looking at the quality of the carbohydrate that's coming in. So, but that would never come up on rounds. It would never come up in my mentoring discussions. So when I finished all of my formal training, because there's really not a lot of time when you're in the midst of all that process, there's so many other things you have to come into a relationship with. I said, well, let me now that
like, I have, for example, an internship, you're working. I mean, I think they've cut the number of hours, almost beyond human endurance.
Yeah, well, and frankly, I almost died driving home after a 40-hour shift one day. I mean, I fell asleep at the wheel. And I was the last year before the work hours changed. So my second year, I got to help make up this.
And it's been cut. Wasn't it unlimited?
Oh, yeah.
There was an unlimited
claim. Oh, yeah. You just worked till your work was done.
And the theory was it would make you a better doctor.
Oh,
but
sure.
I see people walking around basically as zombies.
Well, and they say that the sleep deprivation can almost give you the equivalency of 0.8 alcohol, you know, or 0.08 or whatever that number is. So, I look back on it and I think, well, we did what we could. I existed within the system that was given to me that I had to grow up in. But these days, they do have work hour caps. And
what are they like?
I think they can work a max of 24 hours, which still seems really crazy.
It's also crazy for circadian rhythm. I've worked a lot with – we were hired in various capacities to work with airline pilots.
Yep.
And I learned all about circadian rhythm and, you know, they
– Right. If you've ever been to the ER in the – not the middle of the night, but the like 4 a.m. part of the night before they go off, they're zombies.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate because that's, you know, you're not being paid a living wage even really. Yeah. So when you're doing all that
but
work.
But you haven't got any time to spend the money anyway.
No, exactly.
But so, I mean, on their circadian thing, even it's not only the number of hours, it's the rhythm.
Exactly.
So for example, we learned they had policies in some companies where they had to get 24 hours off. Well, that's horrible. 16 hours off is good. You go home, you unwind a little bit, and you sleep. 24 hours, that means by the time you're about ready to go back to work, your body is screaming to sleep.
Exactly. So. And it's difficult, too, because even in the like nutritional data, sleep deprivation changes leptin, ghrelin, which are the hormones that influence craving. So you may have the best of intentions to eat, but I can remember a guilty pleasure, my post-call meal, which I wasn't plant-based in residency. Let me tell you, I would have been starving because there's no food, but I would have bacon and corned beef hash.
Oh, I can remember when I was working 14, 15 hours a day. And you go home at night, 9 o'clock, and then you'd start eating. You'd eat all night.
Right.
And it'd be bad stuff.
And to boot, by the time I finished residency, I'd gained 20 pounds.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no health at the end of residency. So at that point, I moved out to Tucson to work with Dr. Weil. And subsequent to that, I've been a major contributor to their nutritional content. So I've been researching and staring at the data for the past 15 years. And
tell us, if you would, since you mentioned him, what is he and what is his philosophy?
Dr. Andrew Weil, he was a Harvard-educated clinician who decided in the early
– MD.
He's an MD who, for whatever the reason, was a little bit more broad-minded. He'd spent time studying healing traditions in the – I believe it was the Amazon. I'm sorry, I don't know.
He did drugs.
Well, that too.
Yeah. He did ayahuasca. He was a 60s kind of guy.
Yeah. I mean, he did. Well, so there is a whole chapter to him where he expanded his consciousness with shamans in the rainforest. It wasn't just for play and fun. But there's a whole sub story on that.
Know.
And that's another conversation.
I was just being facetious. We all did that when we were young.
Excluded here.
You missed a lot.
But he basically, so when he had these sort of eye-opening experiences, he really realized that there was more to healing, there's more to the human being than what was being given in medical curriculum. And so he began to, through his own research, began to incorporate these things for patients, which at that point in time in the 70s was revolutionary, that he was looking at mindfulness, things like nutrition, sleep quality. Is there any role for botanical medicine? How is it that our community affects us? How is it that water or space around us affects us? So he was heretical for many years until the data and the research began to show, which almost seem obvious to me now, that these things would play an important part.
But it wasn't the medical model of the time.
It really wasn't. And so he through that sort of visionary process, has created a training program based in Tucson that's a fellowship for clinicians and now for health coaches that takes them through a two-year journey that's online modules and 3 one-week in-person experientials. So for one of those experientials, I give them a lecture where we take food samples. So I've always felt like if you want to go plant-based or you want to hear more about plant-based, you have to taste it, experience it, get the vitality that can come from eating that way into your body. So it's been one of their favorite lectures for many years now because they call it Siri Snacks.
We will pick that up in just a moment when we return in the Think Tank talking about your health.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we are back with Dr. Siri Chen Khalsa and Francine Hardaway. We're talking about nutrition and health. We kind of skimmed over a little bit at the beginning. You were talking about plant-based. We have vegetarian. We have vegan. We have some other thing, not sure exactly what. Could you differentiate those for us? And,
absolutely.
And if you have, if there are strengths and weaknesses of any, talk us about, to us about that as well.
Absolutely. So I always like to say that there are many ways to feed yourself. And some people adopt a label. And they say, I am X. And the way that it can become confusing is how the choices are motivated. So typically, if you'll hear someone say they're vegetarian, it means that they may or may not be eating dairy or eggs, but they're not eating fish or meat mm-hmm. of any kind.
Or not eating meat, maybe fish, right?
Well, that's more pescatarian.
Okay.
But in my mind.
All right.
But some people might say.
I've heard people say vegetarian, but I eat fish.
Right, yeah. So. Well, I guess you could say that, okay. But I call that more pescatarian.
Okay.
The next category is, and you can say lacto-ovo, meaning you eat lacto-ovo vegetarian, meaning you eat eggs and dairy.
Mm-hmm.
The next category is vegan. And typically, vegan denotes no animal product of any kind. And that can include things like honey because of the potential impact to the bees.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, people who are advocating for a vegan, quote-unquote, lifestyle have it motivated through ethical issues. And they're doing it particularly out of respect to animals and wanting to preserve and protect animals. So their dietary choices may not always be as healthy, but they have no animal product of any kind in them.
So you're saying when you go from vegetarian to vegan, it's less about your health and more about ideology.
You can still eat Oreos.
Yes.
That's the
And you can eat fried potatoes.
Fried potatoes.
You know,
right.
You can have – and the other hard part about it, and this is, a really long arc for discussion, is that there are a lot of plant-based meat products that have come onto the market beyond beef, Impossible Burger. But there are also a lot of soy and gluten-based products that mimic meat. So you can get
gluten being wheat.
Gluten being wheat, yes.
Okay.
And so you'll find it's called seitan, and it's a vital wheat protein that's kind of like a glue, and it creates something you can make like deli meat almost out of. The difficulty in some of those is that those are soy isolates, and they may have been processed in non-organic conditions. And the majority of soy that's grown, if it's not organic, has been processed in with Roundup and, you know, the other issues that come with that. So there is an issue ostensibly that the vegan diet isn't always healthy. So there is a group of physicians.
What are you missing if you have a vegan diet?
It's what you're getting that you shouldn't get.
Yeah, exactly.
The concoctions that you have to eat in order to.
Right. Processed food, fake food, all that.
But I don't want to upset the vegans listening because vegan diet can also be very healthy. And that's when you look at the vegan diet as something called whole foods plant-based. And so it's a nuance, but a lot of times that when you extend it, the vegan diet into this terrain, which we call whole foods plant-based, it means that you're really not adding any processed oil. So no vegetable oil, soy oil, no coconut oil.
What do you have for oil? To cook things, sometimes you need oil.
Yeah, you can use extra virgin olive oil, but it's really – it depends how far you are on the spectrum. Some people do no added oil, and they will water sauté their food or they'll bake it without oil. But there – and again, this is a broad continuum of is fat healthy or not and how you cook with the fat. So if you cook it fat at a higher temperature, the fat starts to denature, particularly if it's extra virgin olive oil. So above 350 – it starts to smoke.
When it smokes, that's bad.
Exactly. We call it the smoke point. So it really is interesting. So just to kind of keep it clear, it is hard to keep all the terms clear. However, the plant-based, whole foods plant-based diet definitely has a much broader range of whole foods in it. So whole grains, legumes, nuts, seeds.
What's legumes?
Oh, those are beans.
Those are beans.
You know, beans, the natural
kidney
fruit.
Kidney beans. And they're also – kidney beans and things like that are also – have the character make you feel full as well.
They do. And they can also cause gas, which, you know, is a big complaint of people who go plant-based initially. Mm-hmm. So there's some nice tricks for cooking beans better.
You have to figure it out. Do you have, first of all, you have to figure out what gives you gas after you eat it, and then you can cut it out or not eat it when you're going to be around people or cook it differently.
Or learn what the shelf life is.
Yeah. So there's a couple of physicians that if your audience wanted to look into, Neil Bernard has a website, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and Dr. Michael Greger, nutritionfacts.org. Both of them have a resource of what a whole food plant-based diet looks like, but it's cooked greens and vegetables. You can include nuts and seeds, beans.
Beans will give you – I'm going through this and I'm saying there's these foods. Like if I'm eating only, you know, traditional vegetables, I'm going to be still hungry at a certain level.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
That's what potatoes are.
Potatoes.
Yeah.
And potatoes are not bad.
No. Potatoes there's definitely – Dr. McDougall is an advocate for having the potato starch in the diet.
Uh-huh. 30 seconds. One more piece of advice.
Sure.
Nugget.
I think it's important to recognize that the whole food plant-based, from my point of view, is the healthiest way to go and to really not move into the highly processed foods.
All right.
And if you want to reverse your heart disease, that is the one that's advocated.
Yeah.
Well, you sent me a clip. That's what got me. So, doctor talking about how he was plucking a piece of fat out of somebody's veins that looked like a piece of chicken fat.
That's what started my path.
All right. We will return. We're going to hear Francine's personal journey and how she got into this, and an anecdote that you may be able to relate to when we return, talking about your health in the Think Tank.
But I don't need animals, and they don't need me.
The Think Tank. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we are talking your health, diet, and the like. Dr. Siri Chan Khalsa and Francine Hardaway, you have a personal narrative story, Francine.
Well, I do, because I was a marathon runner back in the day, and my mother was a woman with high blood pressure. And we were a family of heretics of all kinds. Everyone who knows me knows I still am. But my mother...
One of my favorite things about you.
My mother decided she didn't want to take the available high blood pressure medication, or she couldn't. And so she went to this thing called the Pritikin Longevity Center in the 80s. And it was really... It was, you know, off the edge, as almost like a cult. But Nathan Pritikin's argument was that he could reverse heart disease if he put people on this special diet and he had them exercise. So my mother went to Santa Monica, you know, to buy. He had a place on the beach in Santa Monica. So this was a rich person's, you know, cure for heart disease. And my mother went, and you had to stay there for a while. So I went and joined her. And I was training for a marathon. And one of the other things that you did was you had to listen to lectures and see demonstrations. And so one night, the lecture was this huge slab of beef, and somebody cut the fat off it, you know, and it was like 15 pounds of fat. And the guy said, this is what 15 pounds of fat looks like. And that's what you have. And then he showed slides of what it looks like when it's in your arteries. And I was scared. It scared the pants off me. Mm-hmm. So that was the end of eating meat. So then I existed for years on chicken and fish. And then I saw, and I guess I ought to backtrack and say my journey really was a journey, because by the time I got to where I was now, I'd been through all of the ways that you get information about the food supply. And so I looked at some documentary about how chickens are raised on batteries, and like, it was awful, because I'm an animal fan. I mean, but this was really awful. And they talked about steroids and hormones and everything like that. And I said, well, that can't be any good. So then I went to fish and I became a pescatarian. Then I went to Thailand and Vietnam. And I looked at the way fish was caught in those countries where we imported a lot of our fish from and what else the denizens of those countries did in the same water that they fished in. You know, they wash their clothes in it. Some of them excrete into it. You know, there's a lot of issues in those countries. And the rules for getting fish into the United States were not as strict as the rules for meat and chickens. So I decided, well, that's the end of fish. And so I think I had already become plant-based when I met you, Siri, which was I became plant-based in 2011. Then my daughter had to lose weight, and she went to a place called True North, which is disciples of Dr. Esselstyn and Doug Lyle. And she lost 70 pounds, and she was never hungry, ever, ever, ever. And I went up there and visited her, and I ate the food they ate, and she showed me, you know, what it was like. And I thought, wow, this is absolutely awesome. She feels so much better. I felt better. So I came back, but now I am whole food, plant-based, at home.
Okay, whole food means what?
Whole food means there's no processed food in my house except, and I have issues with this, but I've made an exception, vegan cheese, cashew cheese.
Oh, I hear you on that.
Yeah. I eat cashew cheese from this one dairy that has very few ingredients in the cheese. It's processed, but it's very good, and it's lightly processed. The woman's a 5-star chef who became a vegan.
So to somebody listening, a processed food probably would be anything that comes in a box or a can.
Exactly. We don't eat anything canned or anything boxed in the house.
It comes through some manufacturing process.
Yeah. So we don't eat that.
So what's your diet look like, and how do you stay full?
I brought my breakfast, and it's steamed collard greens with hemp hearts and hummus.
Ooh, yum.
And it has a little sauerkraut in it because that gives it a flavor, and it's also a fermented food. So that, you know, kind of mixing and combining.
And that's fermented for flavor?
It's fermented because fermented food is supposedly probiotic and prebiotic.
Which means what?
Also good for you. Pass to you, Siri.
Yeah, fermentation is one of the oldest methods of preserving food on the planet. So technically, yogurt is fermented food. And what's happening is that some of the constituents of the plant or yogurt, as the case may be, have lactic acid bacilli in them that are able to grow and reproduce. And these are the same bacteria that reside in our gut. So there's a prevailing wisdom. So things that are fermented are things like kimchi, sauerkraut, poi, apple cider vinegar.
And what's this do for you? Help with digestion?
Well, it depends. We're still really trying to figure that out. So mm-hmm. We know that the microbiome, which is the bacteria and their genes that live in the large intestine, are one of the most sought-after research endeavors in the moment. So we understand now that the things that are produced by these bacteria that come into our bloodstream have a bearing on memory, have a bearing on autoimmune function, on cancer. We can't totally draw correlations, but there's about 10,000 different strains of bacteria, if you will, and each person has between 700 to 1,000.
And not all bacteria is bad.
Wait, not all bacteria
is bad. To the layman, that's a bad word.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So we hear like about this E. coli that causes people to die. These are bacteria that have strains that are thought to be beneficial to health. Interestingly, through the past two or three generations, through lack of breastfeeding, through cesarean section birth, because the initial microbiome comes through birth, the vaginal canal. It's the mother's bacteria seed the baby. and then it's nourished through the breast milk. But antibiotics have impacted it, certain factors that are perhaps in the water, certain pesticides. So as the diversity, the number of bacteria that we have in the gut has diminished, we're seeing possible links to long-term health. And the implications of that are really profound. And one of the things that's really an interesting clinical question is, how can we actually improve that diversity? And the only thing that the research seems to bear out is more biodiversity in your diet, meaning if you have a mono diet of chicken noodle soup and mac and cheese and maybe salad, you're not going to get enough diversity of phytonutrients and fiber, which feed the bacteria different types of fiber.
So if we're cutting out, meat and a whole lot of in processed foods, we're cutting out most of the stuff that most people eat, and yet you're saying we need to be more diverse in what do we eat. What do we replace this
there
with?
There are a lot of studies that say, well, let's put it this way. If you're alive now, you're screwed as to conclusions, because a lot of this research is just being done now. I mean, it's our bad that we didn't do it earlier, mm-hmm. and we let the population, the obesity stats and the heart disease stats and the cancer stats grow like they did. But, you know, like I went on this, I always tell my friends, I want to optimize myself for immortality. That is not obviously can't happen, but there's a theory in the longevity community that you can expand your health span by being careful about what you eat and your sleep and your stress and your mindfulness and so on, and that you can stay healthy until right before you die, and then you just fall off a cliff instead of spending 10 years in a nursing home. And so that's kind of why I went on this journey, and it's what I care about. I also love that it's good for the planet. Who wouldn't? I'm so used to it now that I couldn't go back. You know, it's like nothing looks good to me.
What do you do when I see how you could develop a diet that you're comfortable with at home? Then you go to a friend's house or you travel to another country. What do you do?
This happens to me all the time. I have come down to believe you do the best you can. In other words, when I go to a restaurant, I say, I don't eat anything that has a mother or a face. Almost everybody understands that. And then you have to still contend with oil and salt. Mm-hmm. And so you can look at things and say, well, you know, these French fries, they have oil in them. I'll just avoid them, you know. And salt is the thing that's hardest to avoid in restaurants.
We've developed a taste for it, and it's part and parcel of menus.
Yeah, it's worse than that. They salt lettuce before they put it in a salad because it preserves them, you know, or it preserves them a little bit. And then, like last night, I went out for Thai street food, you know, to this really great Thai street food restaurant. And I know that the only thing that's really wrong with that restaurant is that they put oil in just about everything. So I just take a deep breath and I say to myself, I'm going to do this and enjoy it. I'll eat plant-based. It's not processed. There's a lot that's good about it. And then tomorrow, I'll try to control it a little bit better.
I don't see how. It seems to me if you don't do something like that, you're setting up for failure because you throw up your hands and you say, "Well, I'm off the wagon."
Well, you don't. Exactly. That's right. You don't throw up your hands. You negotiate back from the cliff.
And I think
we're coming up on another cliff right now, which is time. We will return in just a moment, and we will conclude our segment on your health in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We are back discussing your health. All right, Dr. Kalsa, I have listened to this, and I suspect anybody who sort of listened throughout this hour, we threw out all kinds of things here, but give us some idea. I mean, you say plant-based. What do meals look like?
Absolutely.
And how do you have meals that are filling? You're not feeling hungry in 20 minutes. You know, the old Chinese food joke.
Exactly.
Describe what it actually looks like.
Well, I want to take one brief minute to describe what the standard American diet kind of looks like. And there's a wonderful thing that looks at dietary intakes. And the top five calorie intakes for the average American is a grain-based dessert, yeast bread, chicken, soda, and alcohol. And I want to make the point that one is going to be hungry on that diet because it's devoid of nutrients. It's devoid of phytonutrients, it's devoid of minerals, it's devoid of vitamins, in part because it's highly processed food. So the grains have been milled and parts of the grain that have the nutrients have been removed to allow for longer shelf life.
White flour.
Exactly.
That's an example.
Exactly. And so if you look at the top two foods, they are white flour based. So the average American, the majority of their calorie intake on any given day is calorie-rich, nutrient-poor. So what we're trying to do is to change the conversation to nutrient-rich, not as much focus on calorie, because if your food is nutrient-rich, you are probably then not going to be as hungry, maybe not eating as much, and finding your own set point. So when we talk about a whole foods plant-based diet, I always encourage people to start with Dr. Greger's, what he calls his daily dozen. And you can find this as an app. You can get a little handout printed on your fridge. And basically,
if you mention an app, tell us how you find it.
Oh, sure. So you can go onto the into the app store. I don't have Android, but I'm assuming it's
there.
What
do you look for?
It's called the Daily Dozen.
The Daily Dozen.
The Daily Dozen. Dr. Greger's Daily Dozen. And okay. It'll come up and you can check the boxes when you've done the activity of that food.
Okay.
So it's 3 servings of beans, 3 servings of fruits, 2 servings of leafy greens, 1 serving of flax, 3 servings of whole grains. So that could be quinoa, which is a seed, millet.
Whole wheat?
Whole wheat, exactly.
Flaxseed, for me, is a little esoteric.
Yes.
That's something you're going to have to hunt for.
Well, I like to do flax crackers, actually. Right. This is a really fun treat. Berries, 1 serving a day. Cruciferous vegetables, your broccoli, cauliflower, 1 serving a day.
Christopher's vegetables?
Cruciferous. Cruciferous.
C-R-U-C-I-F-E-R-O-U-S.
Sounds like an SAT word.
Yeah.
It isn't. Okay. But it means cauliflower and broccoli and Brussels sprouts.
Yeah. Okay, I understand.
Yeah,
okay.
And they have very potent.
And cabbage.
And nuts, 1 serving per day, and liberal uses of spices. And spices actually have, for example, thyme. Now, we wouldn't do this, but thyme per weight has more iron. It's a plant-based iron than meat. Now, you're not going to eat a pound of thyme.
Or a quart. Or
yeah, but it's important to recognize that plants actually do have the necessary vitamins and minerals. The only exception I would make for the total plant-based diet is B12. And most people who are on a whole foods plant-based diet take a B12 supplement. Mm-hmm. And people who argue against the quality or the longevity per se of the diet say that that's a significant issue. And if you're over 50, about half the American population is B12 deficient. So eating the standard diet isn't getting you there either. Mm-hmm. And that's a really multifaceted question.
So what I do, because I'm on this diet, is I have my blood drawn as often as I can get it paid for. And I find out if I'm missing anything, like B12, like potassium, like sodium, because there are things like that that you could be missing. And then I just adjust my diet to add more of these. But what I've found from just listening to you, Siri, is that even as carefully as I monitor my diet, I might be missing some things on Dr. Greger's list on some days. Like if I don't always eat flax seeds.
That's the one on that list that I thought was acid. Is there any substitute for that?
'Cause Well, try a flaxseed before you rule it out totally.
Okay.
I'll bring one next time.
Where do I
meet you.
Where I
they
find
have
them
ground flaxseed in the grocery store, and you put it on, you spoon a little
put it on your oatmeal or something?
Yeah, exactly.
So a typical.
Can you make them into crackers?
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's what she said.
That's what I love.
She has flaxseed crackers.
They're available at any grocery store these days.
So you're able to get, and by the way, there's so much of a shift coming, you know, now that I walk into grocery stores now, and I've been vegan for almost 10 years. And the alternatives now are unbelievable that there didn't used to be. There's like, know this, know that, know this, know that, you know, kinds of cheese, kinds of crackers, things that
treat food, as I like to call it.
Treat food. You don't totally eat food like that, but you can add it to the vegetables. And when I add it, I'm very lazy. So this is the lazy person's whole food plant-based diet.
Yeah, I mean, your average person does not want, will not spend an hour and a half cooking dinner.
Mm-mm. No. So
it's got to be something that you can put together.
You can use frozen vegetables and you can steam them. And what I do, I happen to like using fresh vegetables, but I buy 6 different kinds of vegetables, you know, every week, one for every day. And I split them up any which way that I can. And I buy, you know, berries and fruits, and I split them up every day. It's not that hard. It's actually pretty easy.
Yeah. Meal prep can go a long way. So taking 2 days out of the week to do a larger group of cutting up your vegetables and storing that in the fridge also helps reduce food
I have
food
a lot
waste.
Of these little Pyrex containers that are full of things that I put together.
That have already been pre-made.
That are already been pre-made and that I then eat.
It's really interesting because there's really very, very small amount of people who think that adding more vegetables to the diet is detrimental. So even if someone still wanted to eat a little bit of meat or incorporate it, reducing that has a positive environmental impact as well as health benefit.
My blood cholesterol went down from, you know, like 205 or 210 to like 184. And my HDLs went up and
How long before you saw an impact?
Not very long, but the impact continues. Mm-hmm. That's what's really interesting. The longer you stay on it, the better the result gets.
The epigenetic.
You change you just change the composition of your body. I'm healthier now than I was 10 years ago.
You get the final word. Thank you very much, Dr. Siri Khalsa and Francine Hardaway. We'll be back next week in the Think Tank.
But I don't need Adderall.